Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, and we are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com, by VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By the ATV Swim Spas, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,448 grants, totaling $3.7 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, the creator of Swim Smooth. His name is Paul Newsome. Paul, how you doing?
I'm very good, Bob. Thanks for having me here today. It's been great to be in California this last couple of weeks and running some coaching courses and getting America enjoying Swim Smooth.
It's a British guy, right?
Originally, but now I've been in Australia for the last 15 years.
So I can tell.
If my accent sounds a little bit funny, that's what it is.
So, age of seven, is that when you got into swimming?
That's correct, yeah. Just as a little kid in a, in the standard sort of swimming classes and doing little races and those type of things. But I got into triathlon when I was about 16.
About 16, 17 years old, and get into triathlon. And before you know it, you're training with Simon Lessing and Julie Dibbins.
Absolutely.
And people who've gone on to become some of the legends of the sport. But the sport was still in its formative times, right?
And very much so.
And this is before the first Olympics was 2000. So this was that a goal at that point?
It certainly was. Yeah, I was very lucky to be part of the world class performance program, which went on to produce athletes like the Brownlees, of course.
Yes.
So to be there, based at the Bath University with Chris Jones, was an amazing thing. And one day he said, we've got a new athlete joining us. It just so happens to be Simon Lessing.
And yes,
we all got a little bit nervous, but training with somebody of that sort of magnitude was unbelievable. And leading up to the Olympic Games in Sydney, it was fantastic. I was pretty much Simon's swim bitch,
really?
If you want to call it that.
So
we'd tag along together and do the swim sessions together. I could ride with him, but if we go out for a run, he always had his hand behind my back, just pushing me along the tow pathway. So, but that was fantastic to be involved with that, and also to see from a coaching perspective how to relate to different athletes. And I was very fortunate a couple of years after that to be employed by British Triathlon to be their talent scout for going forwards. And
so you were looking for the next Brownlees.
I was looking for the next Brownlees, and I happened to find a guy down in Blandford in Dorset by the name of Harry Wiltshire.
Oh, yes.
Now, this is the very first athlete I ever started coaching at that point, and he was only 15 and I was about 18 or 19. And I don't know if you've ever seen Harry's stroke. I'm sure you probably have. He's got a very unconventional swimming stroke style, and I started working with him and sort of recognizing that, sometimes that longer, smoother freestyle stroke is not necessarily the most efficient way for people to swim. And Harry was definitely a very, very much sort of a windmill style of stroke, and sort of delve into that and think, well, something that he's doing must be working well. And, last year, of course, at Kona, he was first out of the water, and he's gone on to become a pretty accomplished athlete.
What's fascinating is when you think about swim strokes, I remember another Brit named Spencer Smith.
Absolutely.
You looked at his stroke above the water and you're going, oh my God, it's awful.
Absolutely.
But there's something going on underwater because he was going fast.
Totally, that's exactly right. A lot of people believe that athletes like that, even the Brownlee brothers don't perceive themselves as having a great freestyle swim stroke, but obviously something they're doing is pretty effective. And when we worked with Dave Scott a couple of years back, he said, please don't ever show my video, I'm a bit of a hack. And I said, Dave, you can't be a hack if you've won six Ironman World Championships and pretty much first out the water every time as well. So, I think a lot of people feel like they're achieving despite their stroke. We believe that they're actually achieving in triathlon, in the open water, because of their stroke.
So when you're taking an athlete from the pool and you're putting them in open water, and it's funny because you just assume somebody's good in the pool, they're going to be great in open water. It's a totally different game.
Totally different.
And how have you had to adjust people's stroke to the open water?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things when you look at the difference between really good pool swimmers and really good open water swimmers is the difference in their turnover.
A little closer to that guy.
Yeah, sure, yeah. So the difference in their turnover when their arm stroke, their stroke rate, basically. The stroke rate of a great open water swimmer tends to be probably around about 10, 15 strokes per minute higher than their pool counter. centre parts. Generally speaking, though, a lot of the world's best open water swimmers and triathletes, they tend to be a little bit shorter of stature, a little bit lighter build. If you think about Alistair Brownlee, for example, he's not the biggest dude in the world sort of thing. So he needs to match his speed by getting that stroke rate up and keeping the rhythm going.
So a higher RPM.
Higher RPM, exactly right. Especially when it's quite rough and choppy out there and you're swimming around, you know, hundreds of other or thousands of other swimmers, you've got to keep your momentum going. So that's one of the key differences. And of course, the way the arms come over the top of the water as well. You know, as a kid, I remember being taught, you know, you've got to get your elbows high as you possibly can, you know, that sort of almost finger trail type of thing. And that might look pretty, but of course, there are no style points in triathlon or open water swimming. It's not who looks the prettiest, it's who is the most effective. So when we met up with the Brownleys in Bradford a couple of years ago, we asked them about their strokes, and both of them just thought, oh, no, we haven't got a very good stroke. And I was just amazed by that perception.
You're the best
really.
In the world.
You're the best in the world. And
two-time gold medalist.
Absolutely,
yeah.
You know, so it was... It's quite an interesting thing, really, and I guess one of our missions is to try to show people how to be most efficient in the pool and also then to transfer across properly into the open water for triathlon or indeed open water swimming events. And, you know, the last few years myself, I've been spending a bit of time marathon swimming and doing these longer
distances. You have, like the 10K thing.
Yeah, well...
You're doing 20 milers.
28 miles.
28?
Yeah. Around Manhattan, yeah.
Oh, you did the Manhattan swim.
Yeah. So I was lucky to win that in 2013.
Yes.
Just by having a stroke, which is well suited. You know, the water temperature was 57 degrees, so non-wet-suited swim. You're in there for 7 hours and swimming against the currents up the Harlem, down the Hudson.
And you're also looking out for things floating.
A lot of things floating in the water, yeah. Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty dirty in there, but... you know, I just had this vision sort of thing of it actually felt cold, but it was just a really liberating experience to be able to swim around, you know, one of the greatest cities in the world and to, you know, really get in amongst it.
What's interesting is during the interviews we did in Kona, the one, I don't usually get surprised during an interview, but when I was interviewing Lucy Charles, it just said, well, you know, as you were training in 2012, trying to make the team at 800 meters and then potentially do open water at this, you know, one or the other, what type of yardage were you swimming a week? Is 100K.
100K
a week.
Absolutely.
And I was flabbergasted, and that became sort of a hashtag, people, 100K a week. It's crazy. Over years, and I've seen the same thing in running, it's all quality.
Yep.
No, you just got to do the quantity. Guess how has it changed and where are we at now with that?
I guess it depends a lot on, you know, your life situation.
Yes.
I mean, when I train for Manhattan, you know, it's the world's longest marathon swimming event. I've got two little kids. I've got a business. And,
right.
You know, I haven't got that all the time in the world to train. I think I averaged out around about 40 Ks a week. The guy who came second, who was, almost 20 years my junior, was swimming over 110, 120 kilometers per week. So I'm very much of the belief of quality, of course, over quantity, but I still recognize the value and need for the quantity for the athletes performing at the very, very highest level. And yeah, Lucy is a fantastic athlete. In fact, my best man at my wedding, a guy called Roy Shepherdson, was her coach back in the UK back in the early days, and we've done a bit of work with Lucy as well. So she's a super tough nut and very, very hard worker.
Have you found, since you moved from not just pool swimmers, but you work with triathletes?
Yes.
That engine that people develop from swimming, if you look back at our Mark Allen, Dave Scott, and so many of our great triathletes started as swimmers.
That's right.
And they use that engine to learn the bike and to learn to run.
Totally. If
you still see that.
Absolutely. You know, and I think stories like how the Brownleys got into triathlon with respect to, you know, they weren't the greatest sprinters in the world. And unfortunately, when you're a little kid, all you've got access to is 50 or 100 meters. And if you're not very good at those, you know, despite how hard you might be working, you might not feel like you're achieving.
Right.
So the story with the Brownleys, of course, getting pushed into this new sport of triathlon and being pushed forwards towards something which actually suited them from a physiological point of view is quite interesting, really. And, you know, we're really trying to push that whole thing through with our program. And, you know, one of our goals over the next 5 years is try to get a million kids around the world to try and swim smooth and try to show them the benefits of, you know, maybe longer distance swimming for the pool, for then also for the open water and triathlon, and really getting them to sort of work on the stroke which works well for them.
And it's for the website, it's swimsmooth.com.
That's correct.
When you say swim smooth,
yes,
right, define that for our listeners.
I think it's about finding the most efficient stroke for you as a person. So behind our coaching methodology is something which we've defined called swim types. So over the years, we've been able to identify six different types of swimmer based essentially on what's holding somebody back. And the idea is to try to make each one of those swim types using the correct pathway and process for them to swim as efficient as they possibly can. Now, the notion of smooth, of course, it brings into your head the idea of, you know, a very, very smooth freestyle swim stroke. Mm-hmm. But somebody like Alistair Brownlee or Tim Don, indeed, who we've done a lot of work with, you know.
Yes.
I mean, we put out a blog just the other day, and an Instagram post just yesterday about how we've been working with these coaches here in California about, you know, making sure that you've got the right stroke for the right person. And it was an image of two swimmers, one who was just under 5 foot, the other one was 6'4", completely different wingspans.
Sure.
Swimming with completely different strokes. And Tim was the first person to like and retweet that because he recognizes in himself, he's not a particularly big guy, but he's got a stroke which has worked very, very well for him. And one of the things which we've always believed is that, you know, somebody like Tim might not look particularly smooth, but of course, the way he's swimming is very, very efficient for him. So that's very much the, you know, the background behind what we're doing. And people have often said, well, should you be maybe calling yourself, you know, the swinger gang or something like that?
Right.
That's the style that we recognize in those great open water swimmers and triathletes. But, you know, it really is about defining the best stroke for you. And, you know, myself and my team of coaches around the world try to help people learn and understand what it is for them.
It's because it used to be more of a cookie cutter. This is the way the elbow comes out. There's a string on your elbow. Imagine you're a puppet and drop the string, you know, drop your hand in front.
Totally.
And everybody's supposed to try to swim the same. So basically what you're saying is everybody's individual. You might have less flexibility in one shoulder rather than another. So we have to deal with that.
That's exactly right. You know, one of the most humbling experiences this week for me is to have one of my heroes of the sport, Julie Moss, turn up on the pool deck with one of our coaches who's based here in San Diego. And Julie's telling the story about how, you know, she's been swimming in the sport for 35, 40 years, and she's talking about, well, through our coaching system, how she's learned to develop a better stroke for her, and she's swimming the best she's ever swum, and just by tapping into things which, you know, sort of work for her as opposed to necessarily trying to mold her into something that doesn't necessarily fit.
So as somebody who was a training bitch for Simon Lessing, right? And I think Simon has sort of gotten the short shift because, you know, he didn't win an Ironman, he didn't win a gold medal, and people don't quite realize how amazing he was, what, 5-time world champion, and when he went to the starting line, he had this regal personality. He had this regal presence that you were just like, okay, who's getting second, third, and fourth? Because Simon's obviously going to win. What made him great?
He was the, as a training partner, he was the best I've ever trained with. Just absolutely phenomenal. And one of the interesting things about Simon was he just never had an off switch. You know, when he came down to train, it was all business. So we would typically swim. We weren't swimming as much as Lucy Charles was doing. We were swimming maybe 7Ks a day, times a week, you know, 50 Ks a week. But on those 7Ks, Simon would just turn up for the middle 4 kilometers and just swim, and he would swim hard. And you go for a bike ride, and he was always half a wheel in front of you.
Of course.
Or you go for a run on the towpath, and he's got his hand behind you pushing you along. He just had this amazing sort of work ethic and just sort of being able to push that forwards. And I think, unfortunately, one of my understandings, having done the same training as him leading up to the Olympics, was the type of training he was doing suddenly shifted. There was a bit of a plan to try and stay with Craig Walton out of the water, if you remember.
Yes,
he was
the best swimmer out there.
He was the best swimmer out there, you know. So the idea was that get Simon out of the water, ride away together on the bike, and then be able to run, you know, run away. And obviously, Simon was 3 or 4 minutes probably quicker than Craig Walton off the bike. Unfortunately, a lot of the training that we started to do was to try to make Simon a lot faster at that point. But where his real strength was, to answer your question, was he was just a real threshold demon, like an aerobic engine, basically. So we started doing these training sessions, which were actually very, very short and very, very fast. You know, I remember doing a session with him, 8 100s from a dive, all of them under 58 seconds, and but on an 8-minute recovery.
Right.
So, yeah, I went away from that thinking, this is the fastest I've ever swum. And yet the next race that I did, the next triathlon, which was one of the Windsor races, I was off the front at the beginning. And then suddenly
died.
I just blew up, completely blew up.
Interesting.
I didn't even make the first pack. I was dropped back to the second pack and just tailing off the back of there. I got on the bike and my legs were screwed and I couldn't go anywhere near to my sort of potential. And, you know, I saw the same sort of thing, unfortunately, with Simon over in Sydney. And it was a bit heartbreaking.
Were you there?
I wasn't actually there, but we were all there in Bath University, all sat around the student TV, you know, watching him. And he continues to be my biggest hero in the sport in terms of his engine, his work ethic, and just to be able to have that experience of training there at Bath University with him and the rest of the athletes there as well was just phenomenally inspiring and has really shaped my career now as a coach.
Could you tell early on that Julie Dibbins was going to be great?
Absolutely, Julie was doing a lot of work with with one of my coaches at that point, Robin Brew.
Yeah,
and I still remember to this day being on a course in Cyprus, and Robin was going through some refinement of her stroke technique, and it just really stuck with me about how his attention to detail. We weren't doing too much video analysis, which is what I sort of specialise in now, but his attention to detail with working with the individual and finding a stroke that was specific for Julie was, you know, very, 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 very sort of foundational for me. And again, you know, I've never been out for a ride. Her and Julie and Leander Cave. Leander Cave, yes, used to sleep on my floor.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, she couldn't afford a house when she first arrived, and we were just students, so we didn't have a particularly fancy house. But yeah, Leander spent probably around about 12 months just sleeping on our kitchen floor or lounge floor. And you know, those really were the golden days back at Bath University.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, Luke McKenzie and Craig Alexander, remember living by the train tracks here in Encinitas, sleeping on air mattresses,
totally,
right?
Yeah,
just trying to figure out how to make a living in this sport.
That's right, yeah. Luke spent the night in our VW Combi. So after I got shoved out of the student accommodation, Luke was, you know, myself and a girl called Annalise Hurd.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember back to Annalise.
I do.
Yeah, world champion. And so it was some good days back there, and very formative for me.
So when did you start Swim Smooth?
I started Swim Smooth in 2004. So after I got to 2001 and decided that I was actually had quite a few injuries, and I was thinking I just need to take a bit of time out. And I always had this goal of traveling around the world. So I grew my hair long, got a beard, you know,
nice,
got the shirts on and stuff, and just went backpacking around the world.
Yeah.
So went through India and Nepal, Southeast Asia, and eventually landed in Perth. And Perth had a triathlon club there called the Stadium Triathlon Club, and I got introduced to it. And the guy who was coaching the program was just about to leave to go and do his PhD.
Yes.
This is 15 years ago now. That guy has gone on to become one of my best friends.
Oh, wow.
So he stepped aside. I was this new young kid from England with this funny accent, and I just graduated with sports and exercise science. So I took on the program, and after working with them for 2 or 3 years, I decided that what I wanted to do, so this is end of 2004, is I wanted to set up a program which showed people how to swim more efficiently.
Right.
And, you know, go through drills and technique and training sessions to help people swim as best they possibly can, primarily for open water and triathlon.
So now you've been in California.
Yes.
Working with the coaches here and up in the Bay Area, Purple Patch.
That's
all
right.
Those,
yeah, I was up there with Matt last
with
weekend.
With Matt Dixon,
yeah,
who's phenomenal. Yeah. Yeah. How big is his program?
Yeah, it's fantastic. You know, and Matt sends Sarah Pianpiano across to Perth, and we'll do quite a bit of work with her whenever she's over for Ironman WA. And so it was nice to finally meet him. I haven't
I've
been liaising with him for many years online, and we share a very, very similar philosophy. I've never met Jerry Rodriguez, but apparently we share a very similar philosophy. So it was really nice to sort of bring that all together and have that time over here. So, you know, we were looking in 2010 to be approached by British Triathlon to rewrite their entire swim coaching curriculum. And then in 2014, the ITU, the International Triathlon Union, asked us to rewrite their swim program as well. So Swim Smooth is now being used in 119 countries around the world through the federations and put out there. So to be here this week and to be starting the thing growing here in America,
yes,
is absolutely fantastic. We've already got 7 certified coaches here, and we're in the process of certifying maybe about 15 or 20 more. So it's very, very exciting indeed.
Well, when you look at you work with elite guys,
yes,
but you also work with the brand new people.
Absolutely.
And obviously, triathlon is different from a lot of other sports because we thrive because of the participatory aspect of it, right?
Totally.
Our age group athletes are ones that make people successful in this sport, or make companies successful in the sport. How do you work with just your raw, very beginner person starting out in the truck lane?
Absolutely.
Rather than your elite guy or
totally,
gal.
Totally, yeah. Well, we were lucky to have somebody come along on the second day of our coaching course, a guy called Brian, who couldn't actually swim more than 25 yards.
Yes.
So that was really sort of inspirational for the coaches to sort of see how it actually develop and refine his stroke. Unfortunately, he'd gone down the pathway himself of trying to make his stroke as long as he possibly could do. So he had this very nice-looking, smooth stroke, but he would have to, you know, he was swimming actually quite quick, you know, for 25 yards, he was doing around about 20 seconds.
Wow.
But having to stop for 30 seconds rest between each lap.
So he sprinted.
So the net result wasn't too great, unfortunately. So working with somebody like that, you know, one of his, the hardest things for him was actually feeling comfortable and aerobic when he was swimming. He was holding onto his breath underneath the water. And swimmers of all levels of ability that I've worked with over the years, you know, if something is going to go wrong with their stroke, it'll go wrong when they're taking a breath.
Yes.
And typically when they've got their head down in the water, a lot of people tend to hold on to the breath. But if you think about it, Bob, you'd never go for a bike ride or run and hold on to your breath.
Never.
Never. You know, and yet people do that when they're swimming, especially when they're a bit nervous and anxious. So that was the story with this guy, Brian, and just trying to get him to exhale a little bit better and feel a little bit, you know, a little bit more comfortable in the water was the starting point for that. And the coaches saw a massive development, and we got a really nice bit of feedback from him about how it sort of put him on this journey to hopefully get into his first triathlon and open water swim. And, you know, this guy turned up on pool deck, he looked about 35, he told us he's 64.
Yes.
You know, he's in brilliant shape sort of thing. And, you know, he just wanted to be able to swim some continuous laps of freestyle. So to be able to work with somebody like that, and also to be able to work with some of the most elite athletes in the world, it's a really fulfilling part of what I do.
Well, when you look at someone like Julie Moss, who has been swimming at an elite level for a long time, and having her have success,
absolutely,
it is huge. So the other thing I've seen in swimming, which has been, I think, a great innovation, is the amount of videotape that you see, right? I remember the first time I got videotaped, and I see the snake following me. My leg is going all over the place. I'm like, who is that? And they're like, that's you.
Absolutely.
Do you find that is really, really helpful for people to take a look at themselves and see what they're doing?
It's hugely helpful. This is my 20th year now of doing video analysis, so I've seen lots and lots of different styles, and, you know, that's very much how we formed the whole swim types methodology,
really, right?
From just seeing lots of people and just working out, okay, there's some commonalities in the way that guy's doing that, and this seemed to work for him, but it was completely different to what I did with her. So video analysis has really helped with that and opened it up. And you know, the next frontier for us really is utilizing what we call like a coach's headset. So once the swimmer has actually seen themselves swimming, we can get them back into the water and be able to communicate with them from the side of the pool and actually talk to them.
Walk them through
whilst they're doing it. So rather than actually getting to the end of the lap and saying, sorry, Bob, you've got to go back and do that again, that drill wasn't quite correct, we've actually got the ability to talk to them in real time. And there's a company here in California who do a lot of work with called Finis, and they've really started to open up you know, prospects for coaches like myself to be able to make us better coaches. And that's what we're really all about, is trying to show people how to improve the standard of coaching. You know,
we
feel like it's probably plateaued off a little bit over the years. Some of the methodologies maybe from the pool haven't transferred as well as they could do into the open water. And that's very much part of what we do, is just trying to educate those coaches.
So the other thing, when we talk about triathlon, probably the number one deterrent for people to do the sport is a swim.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, you think about...
A necessary evil.
Well, you think about it, it's... When you go to open water, there's cold, there's current, there's kelp, there's big fish, there's someone playing bongos on your head, there's glare, everything that's... And you can die, right?
Yeah,
you know, the deal is, like, you go for a swim with a ride with a buddy and you get tired, you guys stop. You go for a run with a buddy, you get tired, you stop. You go for a swim with a buddy and you get tired, you die. That's a problem, right? And
it is.
And I think with the what we call the endurance entertainment marketplace now, with Tough Mudder, Spartan Race, Warrior Dash, Color Run, all the options out there,
absolutely,
triathlon tends to lose because it's expensive, but also because of the fear factor.
Yeah, definitely. I've just started getting into the Attilo races. I don't know if you've come across those much. So the swim run events over in Sweden.
Yes.
And they've been fantastic, you know, but equally quite sort of hairy, you know. You're out there in the middle of the ocean by yourself.
Yeah, and there's no buoys, there's no nothing, right?
No,
you're basically
responsible for you and your buddy, basically. Yeah, you
know. That's pretty scary.
It is, you know, but I think triathlon's still, you know, I'm still very, very passionate about triathlon. As I mentioned beforehand, I spent a few years getting into marathon swimming, primarily because my kids were a lot younger and you know, I didn't have the time for the biking and running, but I'm having a little bit of a renaissance myself. I got back on the bike and been back doing a bit of running and stuff, and, you know, myself and my business partner Adam, we actually hook up online using Swift these days, and you know, he can be in the UK, I can be over in Australia, and we're talking to each other through a headset, riding
while you're riding.
Yeah, it's just amazing, you know. So that level of level of technology coming into the sport of triathlon,
amazing.
I think it's going to really lift the level again, and I'd be really interested to sort of see how, you know, where's the standard at with cycling on the bike for triathlon right now, and how does it affect things in 2 or 3 years with the advent of training, you know, things like Trainer Road and Swift, and I reckon the level's going to go up another notch again, to be honest with you.
Back in the day, and I'm sure when you were younger, people tended not to share, right? Yeah. You had your workout. Simon Lessing wasn't telling you everything he was doing. There was always another level. You saw him in a pool, but he wasn't really sharing what he's doing because at the end of the day, you're sort of competitive. Now, Lionel Sanders is out there, and so many other people are like, listen, if you can go ride 100 miles at 400 watts, have fun with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's no secrets.
No, that's right.
And I think that sharing is really helpful. I've seen it with the cross country kids and the track kids. People are sharing what they're doing, and the kids are all learning from each other. Are you seeing a lot of that in swimming too?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's I think one of our own philosophies is to share that knowledge around and to sort of be able to put it out there.
So not
only can the athletes become better, but so too can the coaches as well. And we're lucky to have done quite a bit of work with Lionel as well.
Have you been doing work with Lionel?
So Lionel sent me some video over. I've given him some advice. I've sent him on to one of our coaches in Montreal. He's done a video session up
there
and stuff. So, you know, that only comes from actually being able to share that knowledge to disseminate my knowledge to one of my coaches and for us to share it backwards and forwards. Lionel's a great guy and be able to sort of pass things backwards and forwards and, you know, be able to action those things. And he's got a great setup where he's training and
he's got the pool now.
He's got the pool, he's got the bike, he's got the treadmill.
Never has to leave the house.
No, or the room even.
I think he swam 51 yesterday at Arizona. He's only a couple of minutes back.
Just incredible to sort of see that. And of course, you know, he's been doing other things as you mentioned on your podcast, Bob, about training with the younger kids and getting them to lift him up and move him forwards as well.
And making fun of him.
Yeah, making fun of him, but sometimes you've got to put yourself on the edge, right?
You really do.
To sort of be able to see, you know, what's possible at the moment and sort of take on board advice and see what works for you, really. And that's one of his greatest strengths, really. To see him come second in Kona this year and see Lucy come second as well, it was quite inspiring.
It's funny. I remember back in the day with McKeely Jones, and they went from, when they went from wetsuit legal to wetsuit, a lot of races were wetsuit illegal.
Yep.
And McKeely was freaked because she was a good, really good swimmer,
but she was
a better swimmer with a wetsuit than without it.
Absolutely.
And she was worried that, Karen Smyers and some of these other gals who were better swimmers would get a huge benefit. And her husband and coach at the time, Pete, basically took her back to Australia was it Dick Harder? I forget who the coach was, who basically had all the kids training with all these kids who were like half her size, making fun of her every day.
Absolutely.
Had her in tears, actually. The coach was like, look how bad her swim stroke is. Swimming with kids like that makes you faster.
It does, absolutely, you know, and it certainly brings on the level of where you're at and where you need to be going forwards. It can be a little bit embarrassing, I guess. You know, we've got a guy in our squad at the moment. He's literally 5'0", 15 years of age, and that's the fastest guy I've ever coached in a
squad
situation. You know, he can hold 106 per 100 meters, long course meters for a 5,000 meter training set. He is like mega quick. Like, he's going to be one of the best open water swimmers on the planet.
And
he trains in our squad alongside, you know, athletes who are 45, 50 years of age who've been doing it all their life, but are quite happy to be lapped by him because, you know, this is the next generation and they get a little bit of inspiration from him, get a little bit of motivation from seeing him whizzing past them. And he's this tiny, young whippersnapper of a lad sort of thing. You know, he's, like I say, he's 5 foot tall. He's got a stroke rate of nearly 100 strokes per minute simply because he has to do.
Right.
One of the other guys I coach is literally, you know, he's 14 inches taller than him, with a huge albatross wingspan, and he swings completely differently. But that's really what we try to do, is we try to embrace both Brad and Byron. That's the names. Byron's the young guy, Brad's the slightly older guy. They both swim at the same speed, but with completely different styles. So rather than trying to mold Byron to becoming Brad or Brad to becoming Byron, it's about recognizing the strengths in what they do and try to really endorse that. So, you know, for the older athletes in the squad to have, you know, young Byron whizzing past them, and Brad's only in his mid-20s.
Yes.
It's embarrassing sometimes, but it's also quite inspiring, I think, as well. And I'm sure McKaylee felt that when she went back to Australia.
You mentioned, Dave Scott earlier about, you know, that he doesn't think he has a good swim stroke.
Not at all. He calls himself a hack, in fact.
Well, he runs like a duck. And the Brownlees, right?
Because
I think people still look at triathletes sort of as they're good at three different things. They're not great. They're good at three different things. And I think sometimes our athletes think of themselves the same way. I'm a good swimmer, good bike, good run, but I can out-endure most people. How do you change that philosophy so people understand that my stroke might not look the prettiest, but the results are the results?
I think it's a mental thing, really. And I
mean,
even having Dave Scott, somebody who I've idolized all my life, sort of thing, to tell me he's a hack and he doesn't want to share his swim stroke. You know, I looked at it and I thought, that's a stroke that's just perfectly suited to open water.
Absolutely.
You know, it might not look the prettiest, but it's suited to the open water. And of course, having the Brownlees tell you, you know, I won't swear here now, but when I asked them the question, what was your stroke like?
It's crap.
They politely yeah. sort of thing, you know, it was just a one word answer. And I was like, how can you guys think that? But they think that because the world view of freestyle swimming.
Well, because they're looking at a Michael Phelps or someone like that.
Or an Ian Thorpe or something like that, you know. And don't get me wrong, those stroke styles still work very, very well for that type of swimming in that type of environment. But in triathlon and open water swimming, it can be very, very different indeed. And, you know, like you've mentioned before with Mikili, there's then the whether you're wearing a wetsuit or whether you're not wearing a wetsuit.
Yes.
Some swimmers out there hate wearing wetsuits.
Sure.
You know, because it lifts them too high. They've got a very, very strong leg kick. And yet their coaches might be telling them, you know, keep your head down, look down towards the bottom of the pool, because that's helping the people with low sinking legs get their legs up.
Right.
They look down, they've got the strong kick and the buoyancy of the wetsuit and the buoyancy of the ocean. Their legs kick the thin air and they don't go anywhere. So one of my, I've got a lady, a coach called Kate Bevilacqua. So she's won three.
Kate, yeah, last year she won Ultraman.
She did.
I'm heading over there tomorrow.
Exactly right. Yeah, exactly. So Kate's won three Ironman titles around the world, and we've seen her swim times go from 65 minutes down to 49 just by embracing her individuality. You know, she's a very short girl, but she was over kicking. She had her eyes looking down to the bottom of the pool. She's trying to stroke too long, you know, and never really enjoying swimming with a wetsuit because her legs would always lift too high.
Right.
So we brought her eyes forward, which seems to be something against convention. We've increased her stroke rate, and she's, you know, the results speak for themselves. It's, you know, a really, really good example of how somebody can actually find the right stroke for them and do really, really very well.
As a swimmer, back in the day when wetsuits first came out,
yes,
the people who benefited the least were the swimmers,
yes,
right? All of a sudden, it gave idiots like me an ability to swim with people who were way better pool swimmers, right? But putting a wetsuit on, all of a sudden, my dragging ankles weren't a problem.
No, that's right.
As a swimmer, did you sort of look at that and go, or were you already more of a coach at that point?
Well, we did, but I mean, we were lucky for Dean Jackson, from whom wetsuits to come. So it was right in the early days before he even had a wetsuit on the market. Said, hey, you know, he said to his guys, how would you design a wetsuit for a range of different styles of swimmers, both, you know, for the elite swimmer who's come from an elite swimming background?
Yes.
How would that suit look? So we formed, obviously, Hoob Wetsuits to actually try to move this idea forward.
Also, so Hoob was that came out of that?
Absolutely. I was waiting to swim the English Channel. So it's end of 2011, September 2011. We sat down there and cost a coffee with Dean Jackson. You know, he's obviously a very vibrant, visionary type of a guy.
Yes, he is.
And, you know, I said, yeah, what would this suit look like for somebody who, as you described, has got the eyes looking down with a strong leg kick, who hates wearing a wetsuit? So we came up with this idea of a low buoyancy wetsuit. And the idea of that in the sport of triathlon at that point in time was just like, what? You want a low buoyancy wetsuit? And we're like, yeah, we want a low buoyancy wetsuit for that type of swimmer.
Right. You just want to stay warm.
You want to stay warm enough, sort of thing, but also you don't want to be changing and affecting the stroke too dramatically or too, you know, too detrimentally. So we created the Hoob Aura, as it was known, sort of thing. And it's since gone on to progress to a different style now. But the fundamentals stay the same for a lower buoyancy wetsuit for that particular swimmer. And of course, we have another style, though, which is for the really low sinky legs. You know, it's very light in buoyancy in the chest and heavy buoyancy in the legs to really lift them up. And we've seen swimmers swimming, you know, significantly faster in that suit than they would do in... from the different styles and stuff like that to actually suit that specific swimmer.
What's interesting to me is I always look at triathletes as the early adapters just because of that, right? Usually we come in with one specialty. We can swim or we can run. Very few people come in as cyclists, right? So everybody has to learn that. But we're always open to try anything. And when you can buy speed by buying a better wetsuit or buy lighter components for your bike or buy, you know, lighter wheels, you can do that for those two sports, for swim and bike. Run, you can't. At some point, as you know, you got running is running. And that's the one part. But when you know, like for yourself, just seeing that people can have improvement and they can do this forever, right?
That's right.
Could be 50, 60, 70 years old and get better, which I don't think there's other sports out there you can do that with.
No, indeed, you know, and like just building in sort of different features as well for being able to sort of make sure that the wetsuit suits maybe like an aging athlete. So one of the classic faults we see when people swim is people tend to cross over in front of their head,
right,
which results in the legs then scissor kicking apart. Now, as you get older, you tend to sort of tighten up a little bit, chest becomes a bit tighter, back becomes a little bit tighter. So we build things into the wetsuit which actually sort of help to reverse that aging process, if you like, and get the swimmer, you know, feeling a lot better in the water. So it's been great working with Dean and those guys, and just like you say, just trying to innovate and being at the head of that.
So what's next for you guys?
What's next? Well, we've got this our kids program that's in under development. So I'm very, very passionate about the idea that, you know, for the little Johnny who's maybe not good at 50 or 100 freestyle, but wants to sort of explore and stay with swimming, stay
right.
with the sport of swimming, to sort of explore avenues of maybe getting into triathlon,
sure.
or into open water, and sort of showing coaches how that pathway can work. But, you know, to still be able to work with the kids who want to compete in the pool and compete in those shorter distance events. So that's one of the big projects. We're trying to grow our coaching network around the world. So far we have 48 coaches. It's a long coaching process to work with us. So it's not like, you know, come on a 3-day course and then suddenly you're certified.
Right.
The coaches here in California attended a 3-day course. They'll come to Perth for 2 weeks in March next year.
Wow, that's a commitment.
It's a big commitment. Yeah, exactly right. But it's important for us to, you know, ensure the quality of what we're trying to deliver here. It'd be the easiest thing. We've got a very, very wide reach through ITU and through British Triathlon. The easiest thing in the world would be to say, hey, everyone who follows us, you can be a certified coach, and we'd have thousands of coaches all around the world
doing their own messaging.
I heard some stats the other day that, you know, 2006 there was one coach to 1,000 athletes. Apparently now it's one coach to 45 athletes.
Wow.
So we're very much of the belief that, okay, well, rather than trying to follow that model, we're still very much of the belief that we want to produce the best coaching platform out there, the best swim coaching platform with the highest quality. So we'll continue to refine that, and we've got other products which are in development. We've got this great little gadget which we released in June called the Marlin, which you can take your phone out, create a map of where you'd like to swim in the open water, pop it underneath your cap, and it actually talks to you when you're swimming. So if you start to drift off course, tells you turn to 1 o'clock, or if you start drifting off 1 o'clock, it says turn to 11 o'clock to bring you back on track. It tells you how fast
it's called.
It's called the Marlin. It's really great. Yeah, so it talks to you about how quick you're swimming, what your stroke rate is, allowing you to give you that sort of live feedback on how you're going. And in the pool, you can download a training session from our Swim Smooth guru. It will go straight onto the Marlin. The Marlin will talk you through that session. So
you're wearing a headphone?
You're wearing like a little bone conduction.
Oh,
it's just a
okay.
very, very small little unobtrusive thing here. And it'll say, you know, Bob, 10 times 200 meters, 20 seconds rest, your target pace is 145 or whatever it might be.
Yes.
Away you go, 3, 2, 1, go. So you start swimming. It records your analysis or records the data, gives you feedback whilst you're swimming.
Yeah.
And as soon as you finish, you just upload it back into the guru. It does some analysis for you and tells you what you need to do for the next session. So trying to close that feedback loop,
yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
One of the things I like about what you're doing when you're talking about your the amount of coaches who are coming out of your program,
yes.
That means these are a lot of coaches who have been exposed to the sport of triathlon.
Yes.
Because one of the issues I've seen, less from swimming but more from running coaches, is running coaches, high school, college, they want their kids to run,
yep.
Period, end of story.
Yes.
You know, swimming, no cycling. And I think we've seen it from a, back in the day, a Carol Montgomery who made
absolutely,
the
yes.
Olympic
yep.
team
yep.
at Canada, 10,000 yeah. and at triathlon. And when she started just focusing on the 10,000, her times went backwards because
yeah.
she was better with swim and bike.
Absolutely.
And Gwen Jorgensen.
It'd be interesting to see how Gwen goes,
you know. Yeah. And Gwen was the perfect example of somebody who ran faster as a pro triathlete at 5,000 than she did in college as just a runner.
Absolutely.
Based on the swim and the bike. So do you see more of the swim coaches being more open to, hey, maybe we should have some bikes on the deck. Maybe we should be doing some things like that. Or is that still way away?
Yeah, probably not the pure swimming coaches necessarily, but we definitely get more open-minded pure swim coaches coming in, recognizing the fact that, you know, they've got 10 people who are adult age group triathletes wanting to join their squad, and they want to know how to integrate them a lot better.
Right.
You know, so that's very, very common. And, you know, back in 2006, I was lucky to spend a lot of time with the Training Peaks guys.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously they talk a lot about functional threshold power on the bike.
Right.
With the power meters and stuff. So it was enough to inspire me to buy my own power meter and work out, well, how can we use something
like this
for swimming?
Yes.
You know, so that language that we taught now, we call it CSS or critical swim speed. It's not something we've designed necessarily. It's just a very simple test that you can work out what your threshold pace is. It's been around since the early 90s. I just happened to look through my research and think, oh, it was staring at me all along.
You had it there.
It was right there, basically. And, you know, so that integrating that type of methodology, which appeals to the triathlete because they know that language from cycling or from
yes.
you know, running pace on the running, to be able to integrate that type of training into a swimming platform really opens up the doors and truly makes a pure swimming program more appealing to, you know, to the triathlete. And it's not a very hard thing to get right. We use the Finis Tempo Trainer. We
yes.
work out what pace the swimmer needs to swim at. So if you were swimming 140 per 100, we'd calculate that's 25 seconds per 25 yards. yards. You set the beeper to beep every 25 seconds. You turn when it beeps. You know you're on pace. It's just like having a power meter in front of you.
Yeah.
But the really cool thing about this is that these tempo trainers are accurate to 1/100th of a second. So on a week-to-week basis, you can make tiny micro adjustments.
Wow.
Just to sort of ensure that you're not plateauing off. And
right.
You're not sort of stuck on this plateau. And, you know, a lot of people don't like doing time trials, especially in a squad situation. They get a bit nervous by it. We've got this cool little algorithm we build into our Swim Smooth Guru, which allows you to do the test initially. But then as you progress, you go into this little thing, which we call the CSS Tweaker. And if you've felt like you've had a really good day, you hit the hero button. If you felt like you've had a bad day, you hit the bad patch. And there's about four or five different sort of grades, basically, that you can do. So you're constantly moving on. And when you hit that button, your little tempo trainer gets upgraded for the next session.
Yes.
So all you've got to do is put it back in your cap, start swimming, and you know that you're actually operating at today's most appropriate intensity. And it's quite a cool bit of innovation, is that?
I love that. Mm. Hey, Paul, thanks so much for getting up early on a Monday after a full weekend of coaching
and
coming in studio. It's always better to have people in studio. I love it.
Thank you very much for having us, Bob. It's a real pleasure. It's
swimsmooth.com for coaches, athletes, triathletes, whatever, just to learn what you guys are doing.
Absolutely. And we've got we've actually got a coach here based in San Diego, John Chip, who's based down at the Solana Girls and Boys School down there. And, you know, he'd love to sort of see some athletes from around this area come down and be able to sort of experience what I've been talking on the show today about.
Love it. Thanks again for coming in.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Again, my name is Bob Babbitt. This is Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantry.com, VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, ATVSwimSpas.com, the official training vessel of six-time Ironman World Champion Dave Scott, RunCatalina.com. Check out all the off-road events on Catalina Island. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we've now raised over $83 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport and sent out 18,000 grants. Check us out on Babbittville and on iTunes, and as always, endurance lives here.